Stacey Lee. Welcome to the next edition of our postgrad audio recordings. Stacey Lee, I'm wondering, as a starting point, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself for everyone tuning in and listening.
Hi, Jess. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me. So I'm Stacey Lee Harrison, the General Awards Manager at the Postgraduate Funding Office, and we are situated on Upper Campus next to the old Jamison Hall. It's now called the Sara Bartman.
Thanks, Stacey Lee. And can you tell me a little bit more about what it means? What do you mean by General Awards?
Okay, so General Awards is a combination of investment funding, donor funding, and GOB funding, which is where we get funds from donors. They donate various awards with various conditions. Sometimes it's investments or bequests where people have passed away and they've left an investment, and we get the interest of the investment with specific conditions. And then the GOB is the general operating budget. That is the money that UCT makes available. So I have the task of putting these all together and funding a student through the various sources, and I use a very popular form called the Form 10A. It's a funding form for postgraduate South African students to apply for all these various sources using one application form.
Whoa, okay, thank you so much for that, because I think many people listening aren't aware of just how many like pots of money are feeding into the kind of awards that you're managing. So that's great to have that background. Thanks very much for that, Stacey Lee. So on to my next question, because I think you already mentioned the Form 10A. I'm curious, because I've heard people talk about the need and the merit scholarships, and if you could help join the dots between what are the need and merit scholarships and how this feeds into Form 10A, and if you can just clarify, if you can just give us a very clear understanding of those, that would be great. Thanks.
So, Jess, the merit and the need on the Form 10A application form is that you have an option. You can choose either you want to apply for merit, or you want to apply for need-based funding, or a combination of both. So that's very important to remember, that you can apply for both. And UCT Merit Scholarships, they are a contribution towards your tuition. So it's almost like a thank you, saying thank you very much. You are a meritorious student. You work very hard. And we'd like to thank you and offer you, it's approximately 30,000 Rand towards your tuition fees. But in order to qualify, you had to have achieved 60% and above as a grade point average for your previous career. So let me give an example. If you're applying for merit funding for masters, your honors should have a GPA of 60% and above in order for you to qualify for the merit-based funding. Then the UCT need-based scholarship, so this is dependent on your family income. So if your family income is 350,000 Rand and below, you qualify for something that we call full financial aid. And full financial aid is made up of tuition, accommodation, a once-off book allowance, and a monthly food allowance. So all these applications that apply for financial need are means tested via the national means test. And if you qualify and your family income is below 350,000 Rand, you get offered the allowances to cover all those things that I mentioned, which is accommodation, tuition. So you get what we call full cost funding. But then there's another part to the need-based funding, which is if your family income is between 350,000 Rand and 600,000 Rand per annum, you qualify for what we call a gap bursary. So a gap bursary is just a contribution towards your tuition fees. It is a percentage bursary. So you could get 50%, 40%, or 60% of your tuition fees covered via this gap bursary.
I had no idea that it was that detailed. And I think it's really, really helpful to have that information, that understanding. And so to clarify, a student would just need to complete the Form 10A, and then your team on your end then looks at the information in that application and makes a decision to say, okay, this is a student who can get a need scholarship, or this is a student who can get a need and a merit scholarship, or is this a student who just gets a merit scholarship? Is my understanding correct, Stacey Lee?
You're 100% correct, Jess. So the student fills in, and this is a very important bit, one application form, because sometimes it can be a bit confusing. You see all these scholarships and you want to be considered for all of them. So you submit the application form for as many times as you see it appear on the various scholarships. But it's just one application form. Complete all the details, all the information, supply us with the supporting documentation, and my team does the rest.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And I'm also curious, so if I have never applied for a scholarship before, and I'm a student listening to this, and I'm suddenly quite interested because this sounds like a great idea for my studies next year, and I get this form and then I get stuck, what must I do if I'm filling this out and I'm getting stuck with the form?
Okay, so there are various options that the student can contact us via. So they can give us a call if, well, as of late, it's via Teams because everything seems to happen via Teams or Google Meet or Zoom. But students may contact us via any platform or portal, online platform or portal. On Teams, if they're previously a UCT student or currently a UCT student, they can pick us up on Teams and they can call us via Teams. Otherwise, they can email us via generalfunding@uct.ac.za. So general as in general, funding, funding, one word, @uct.ac.za. They can also call us on 021-650-2141.
Stacey Lee, I'm curious, if I'm a postgraduate listening to this interview, how am I meant to know if I deserve a merit or a need scholarship? And I'm putting particular emphasis on the word deserve, because you've made it clear what the financial status of the family needs to be in order to qualify. But how do you know students are not just going to say, this is what my family earns, and they're just making it up? So can you tell me a bit more about the processes that happen in your office to make sure that the need scholarships are going to people who so-called deserve the need scholarships?
Okay, sure. So we believe that everyone's deserving of a scholarship, whether it's a merit scholarship or a need scholarship. There's various forms and sources of scholarships, donations, investments, like I mentioned earlier on. And if you don't necessarily qualify for a family, your family income is not 350,000 rand and less, that's not the end of the world. There are other bursaries and scholarships out there, because some are maybe particularly for students in geomatics, as an example, and then they could apply there. But talking about the need scholarships, a student whose family income is less than 350,000 rand, you obviously have to prove it. So we ask for bank statements, and they have to be recently updated 3-month bank statements, salary slips, and it's also very important that the student meets the criteria of applying to the university for a place, because we are funding students who will be registered at UCT. So if you've applied to Stellenbosch University, as an example, or another university, any university, but you're applying to UCT for funding, but you haven't applied for a place or offer to study there, then of course the funding cannot be granted to you because you're not accepted as a registered student within the university. So that's also very important to note, and particularly because the funding closing dates are not aligned with the admission closing date. You have to apply for funding in the preceding year, so the closing dates you are usually from around May every year, and it goes right through till the end of the year into the new academic year as well. There's various closing dates for various bursaries and scholarships. This particular Form 10A, the famous one that we're speaking about, their closing date is the 31st of October every year. And there's other things that play a part in funding and qualifying as well. For instance, if you're working, you can only be working up to 20 hours per week. So that's why it's very important that students are applying for postgraduate funding, honors, masters and doctoral degrees, that they read the conditions of award and the criteria, the eligibility criteria, prior to applying for the application.
Sure, Cecily. So there's so much that goes into what your team does. And I think what I'm also hearing is the very kind of detailed process that goes into actually submitting an application and also thinking ahead towards how you want to do your studies, whether you're wanting, you know, you need to make time for the fact that you also need to take into consideration that you need to study full time. And you also need to be clear about applying for the university in parallel to applying for funding, but keeping in mind that applying for funding happens the year before you actually register and begin your studies. So I think it's really become very clear to me that, you know, based on what you're saying, that students are going to have to read the downloadable PDF that's going to become available with this interview very carefully, and email your team should they have any questions or concerns, and all that information will be available in the downloadable PDF. My next question is around, do you have advice? Because I think you must encounter students from all walks of life in the work that you do. And do you have any advice or any wisdom or something to share in response to the fact that there might be undergraduates who would like to embark on a postgraduate degree, and for their families, you know, they want their kids to enter the working world and to not actually pursue postgraduate studies? And I'm wondering, because I mean they're very, you know, postgraduate studies are expensive, and I'm just wondering if you have any advice for people listening who might be finishing off their undergraduate studies.
Yes, I do. So my advice to, I call them my students because they become my students when they in postgraduate. But my advice to my students would be, I always say to them, follow your dream. There are many, many funding opportunities available, whether it's through the university, external donors, companies, various funding opportunities. Do your research. That's the most important thing. And check the eligibility criteria. If you qualify, apply to as many sources of funding as you possibly can. It might be an administrative nightmare, but you won't be sorry. And you also have the opportunity to work up to 20 hours per week. So if you want to maybe fill in the gap, say you get a 50,000 rand bursary and your cost of attendance is 100,000 rand, and you want to fill the gap and maybe work up to the 20 hours per week, or maybe 3 hours a week, or whatever the case may be, to fill the gap, should you not get full cost funding, then you also have that opportunity where you can work up to 20 hours per week. But my advice is, follow your dream, do your research, and check the eligibility criteria. Complete your application, submit it with all supporting documentation on time, and you won't be sorry.
So Cecily, I think that is great. And I think, you know, this idea of following your dream, it sounds like that there are a host of different funding opportunities available to these students and students out there to actually, maybe they can go the route of saying to their parents, listen, I'm going to apply for these scholarships. There are a whole lot of scholarships that I can apply for. And then it becomes a completely different conversation that you have with your parents when you say, look, I've actually been awarded this scholarship to do my postgraduate studies.
That's absolutely correct. So once a student's awarded funding, if they meet the financial need criteria and they are awarded funding, then the parents doesn't have to worry because their tuition fees are covered, their accommodation's covered, they get a food allowance as well. They get a once-off book allowance. So they are all good to go and set, and if they're residents, their residence fees are covered, and then they can just focus and concentrate on their studies and achieve their dream or what they wanted to achieve through the degree.
And I just wanted to quickly ask, because you did mention it, this administrative nightmare, because I think it is an administrative nightmare, and I really appreciate the honesty that you're saying, you know, that completing these funding applications for many people, that is the experience. And I just wondered if you had anything to say to students who go, this is so terrifying for me to try and fill in this form. And I think actually, now that I think of it, I can't, you know, students who are really in compromised situations, because we in this pandemic with COVID-19, they're working from home, maybe they have difficult issues with getting hold of data. Now they've got to log on to this website and fill in a form electronically. I'm just wondering if there's any support that you offer these students, or any words of advice around managing the administrative nightmare.
So Jess, we do support these students in various ways, so they can contact us whatever means is best for them, via telephone, email. It's all on the website, and it will be on the download as well, the downloadable PDF. And they can contact us in any way that they feel is comfortable for them, and we'll take them through this application form piece by piece. They also need to know that all the information submitted to us is confidential, and it's dealt with in the highest confidentiality. Any student feeling uncomfortable to submit any documentation, they're welcome to have a private one-on-one session with us. Once we're back in the office, then I think it's a lot easier for students, if they're on campus, to come up and do the one-on-one with us. But whatever means our students are using at the moment, whether it's via telephone, whether it's on Microsoft Teams, whatever, no personal information is shared. Any supporting documentation that a student can't get hold of at the particular time, they need to just communicate to us and say, this attachment I don't have access to at the moment, I need to get it from my mom, she lives in the Eastern Cape, as an example, and we will accept the application form and we will follow up on the missing document. So the application is only complete once all the documentation is there, but we don't want to stress the student out, because providing all this information is already quite stressful, and sometimes it's personal things, so like salary slips and financial statements and all sorts of things. We also very much follow the POPI Act, where we do not give any information, any student information or their family's information, to anybody without the student's consent. So this is very strict, and we're very strict about it, especially because of the amount of financial and need documentation that we ask for kids.
Sure, Stacey, I'm so impressed, because it just listening to you describe that, it sounds like you really care about the students, and that students are actually, it's just encouraging for me to even hear that, because, you know, it's such a vulnerable time for students during this pandemic, and to know that they can reach out to the Postgrad Funding Office and have that level of support, I think that that's extraordinary. And I just wanted to ask, so for students who might have concerns about if they submit all this documentation and then they actually don't end up getting the scholarship, and they've submitted all these application forms, are they going to get penalized in some way if they don't get the scholarship?
Absolutely not. Students do not get penalized in any way. In actual fact, if they apply for funding and they don't end up getting the funding, it's usually because they do not qualify, or there's something in the eligibility conditions that they haven't read, and therefore it's important for these students to do the research on the funding opportunities that they apply for, and not just go any mini money more and apply for whatever they find first out of stress. So they have to plan this very well, read through the documentation, read through the application process. Do I qualify? Am I eligible? If I'm not certain, contact us at the funding office and ask for our assistance and our guidance in terms of this. But there is no, students will not get penalized at all. Also, the other part to it is that if we receive funding throughout the year from external donors, and a donor comes to me in maybe November, I've got a database of students who have applied, and perhaps you now qualify for this donor funding, and I can put your name forward for that. So there are various opportunities, and it may not present itself up front if you're not successful, but it will present itself during the course of the year or in some form, as long as you follow the application procedure correctly and you're eligible.
So your advice, I understand, is actually to give as much time as possible to plan, to research, to put together the application, and to actually make the time to connect with your team, because it would be helpful to know how much, you know, if students wanted to make contact with you, what is a realistic turnaround time in terms of the workload that your side is dealing with? Is it a reasonable expectation for you guys to be able to respond within the same day, or what is realistic? That would be helpful to know.
Okay, so on our emails, we've got a 24-hour turnaround time on emails. There are various peaks in the year where this is just not possible, because, for instance, second installment, which is, it's part of our funding process, it's called the second installment process, but what happens is a progress report is submitted to release the balance of your funding, and so all our funded students submitted in June of the academic year, and during that time we get everyone's coming in at the same time. So sometimes it comes with queries, and at that particular peak we get more hands on board to assist, but then the turnaround time can be up to 48 hours. But we do as a team try our utmost to respond to these queries within 24 hours. That's our mandate.
But it does mean that if the deadline to enter Form 10A is XYZ, that I should not leave it till 11 p.m. on the date of the deadline, right? I should.
Absolutely. We want students to start planning for, if it's Form 10A that they want to apply for, the Form 10A opens at the beginning of August every year, so which is now around the corner, and you have from August until the end of October, the 31st of October, to submit this application. So we encourage students that as soon as the application is open, download the application form, read the conditions, read the eligibility criteria, what is required of you. If there's anything that you need to receive from a mom or a dad or somebody, a guardian, start gathering your information and start your application form. As soon as you receive the supporting documentation, hopefully it's within the next week or two, submit that application form. Don't leave it for the last minute. It causes anxiety. It usually happens during the time when there's exams, so students are stressed out because they've got this application to complete on the last minute. It's quite an intensive application. It's asking for a lot of financial detail that you may not know of your parents. It's also, it could be difficult to ask your parents for this information. So don't leave it for the last minute. Don't leave it for during your exam time. It's just going to increase your stress levels. So we want students to submit their applications at least on time and then inform us and say, well, I'm struggling to receive the documentation. But of course, we receive a lot of queries on the day of the closing date. And this puts a lot of pressure on my team as well, because we want to keep our mandate and respond within 24 hours. But if everybody's emailing us or contacting us on the closing date, it puts a lot of pressure on us, and then we're not able to meet those deadlines that we've set for ourselves. And also part of that is that we want students to be not rushing the application, because when you're reading through something that is that intensive, you can miss a lot of important facts because you're rushing. So we want it to be done nice and early, taking their time, being relaxed, stress-free, and able to fill in the applications and submit them at least a couple of weeks prior to the closing date without any stress.
So it really sounds to me that as a student, the best thing you can do is listen up and listen up early so that you're aware of the deadlines and that you're thinking ahead. And as you put it, Stacey, that you're not doing things in a rush. Because when you do things in a rush, what you're writing and what you're filling in and you're missing gaps and all of that might compromise yourself and you might shoot yourself in the foot, even if you are a very well-deserving candidate to get a scholarship, by leaving things too late, you might miss out. And I want to finish off this interview and not take too much more of your time, but I just have two more questions for you, Stacey. And the second last question I have is, could you tell us some of the common mistakes that people make when it comes to applying for funding?
Sure, Jess. So a lot of the common mistakes are students would leave it. One would be they would leave their application for the last minute. They wouldn't read through the application correctly or intensively. They'll just fill in the missing blocks, and then the understanding of how the application form is, there isn't that understanding. So the information provided doesn't push them forward through to the funding round or whatever the case may be. There's so many opportunities on our funding, UCT funding notice board, and I think you'd provide that information in the downloadable PDF as well. And if a student visits our funding notice board, they would find that the application advertisements would come at various stages of the year. So we advise students, don't only apply for one source of funding. That's usually a common mistake. A student would apply for Form 10A as an example, or NF, and they don't receive the funding, and then they're stressed out because they haven't made any other funding applications. So my suggestion is go and check that notice board on a 2 to 3 weekly basis. Go and see what's new there. The nice thing about if you're using the same laptop or the same desktop is if you've clicked on something on the notice board, it changes color. So when something new comes on, it's a different color. So you know, I haven't clicked on this before. I can go in there and I can click on this is new. And also all the new items would be dated at the top of the notice board. So I think that the biggest mistake that someone makes when applying for funding is not applying for enough sources of funding, not taking the time to intensively research what they're studying and what they would like to apply for funding for, and reading the eligibility criteria thoroughly prior to applying for funding.
I think that's really good advice. Thanks, Stacey Lee. And as you say, you know, it's actually wise to apply for more funding, and then maybe once you at a later stage, then you decide which ones you want to accept, or if you want to accept all the options, but not to close a door or an opportunity at this point.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's also very important, Jess, is that apply prior to the closing day and make sure that your application is complete with the necessary supporting documentation. It makes the administrative process a lot smoother, and it gives you the forefront to the funding that is available in the various funding pots because you followed the conditions and the criteria. Like, I have this funny thing that I always say to students, I say to them that you cannot win the lotto without playing the lotto. So you cannot get funding without applying for funding. And on time.
I think that's a great motto to have. And I think, you know, just on that, I think it's really important that students also just take a chance. And if they feel, you know, don't decide for yourself if you deserve a scholarship or not. Apply. And it doesn't hurt to apply. It doesn't hurt to submit an application. And who knows?
If you take the time out to complete that application form and you receive funding, you know the feeling of worthwhile. It's each piece of paper that you've completed and written in the ink or typed or whatever, it's worth your while. So yes, I'd say go for it. Don't be afraid. don't let anyone stop you. Don't think that, oh my word, I don't think I'm going to get this funding. Do your research, go for it, make the application, and you'll be surprised with the outcome.
Fantastic. And also don't forget to apply for UCT as well.
Yes, absolutely. You can't get funding without applying to UCT. Absolutely, yes.
In closing, I just wanted to ask, what are the top three things that have been covered in this interview that you think students need to write down immediately and, you know, make a post-it note that they stick to a mirror, or I don't know, just what are the top three things that you would like students to come away after listening to this interview?
Okay, so the one thing for me is research your funding opportunities prior to applying for a place at UCT or during the admission cycle. That's very important. Keep an eye on the UCT funding notice board every 2 to 3 weeks because funding opportunities are posted throughout the year. That's very important. And then apply for as many funding opportunities as possible and ensure you submit a complete application with all your supporting documents by the closing date. So that's your funding application Bible or your funding opportunity Bible. Follow those three steps and you will be surprised at what will come out of it.
Stacey Lee, I want to thank you so much for making yourself available. It's been great just to hear your perspective, and what I've certainly come away with is the sense that your team and your office are really approachable and you welcome students to contact you, but you also say, please respect us, please respect our workload, and be mindful of the fact that if you give us a lot of time and a lot of warning, then we can all respect each other and we can all get what we need to get out of this.
Absolutely. Yes, that's the 100% yes. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure chatting to you, and this interview is a great pleasure. I'm always happy and willing to provide students with information. And I hope that they go to the downloadable PDF and they'll find quite a bit of useful information on there. And then they must feel free to contact us and feel free to ask us the relevant questions, because every student has a different journey and every student has a different process that they follow with funding because their family situations are different. So if there's any uncertainty, open the email, pick up the phone, or whatever you feel comfortable to do, and contact us. We're here to support you.
We're going to make sure that, you know, the downloadable PDF will contain all the information so that students have everything they need to make contact with the Postgrad Funding Office. But for now, it's great to just, have you on board and to have spoken to you to get a good feeling for what your office is about. So thanks very much, Stacey Lee.
Thank you, Jess.